Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. It is Tuesday, the 3rd of March. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
Hi, Kelly. Good morning.
Glad to have you with me. Also with me today, I have Charlotte Henry. Hi, Charlotte.
Hello. I haven't spoken to you for a week, over a week, Kelly. I missed you.
It's been an age. I've missed you too. Now,
you've been talking to all the exciting developers instead of me. Don't blame you.
No, they were exciting, but you're my favorite in a different way. It was just sort of because I knew I wasn't going to be around to record the show during the week. So we had talked to some other people outside recording hours. So today, however, we are here in recording hours back to the podcast to which we have become accustomed. And Charlotte, I actually want to start with you because you wanted to wrote an interesting piece about the NSA and malware on macOS and how they have a relationship.
Well, yeah, sort of. It's a really interesting story that was published by Ars Technica, and I wanted to share with our readers at the Mac Observer. Basically, a security researcher in Mac and macOS and iOS at Jamf, which obviously connected with a whole host of Apple products, did a talk called Repurposed Malware, A Dark Side of Recycling. And he outlined a whole host of examples how you could take, you know, state-created and high-end malware and kind of repurpose it for your own means. I mean, it's worth reading in detail what he came up with and looking at the code, because it's pretty interesting how he went about things and the implications of, you know, that people think that hacking is kind of you have to come up with your own attack, and sometimes you do. But we also have known for a while that there is, you know, buy on demand malware, right?
Yeah.
We've known this for a while. And he's also showing how these kind of very high-end bits of malware that have been used by very significant actors can also be repurposed.
Yeah, which is interesting. And part of that is absolutely read into the article, spend a little time, get a cup of coffee or sandwich or whatever, and spend some time and really dig into it, because it's a very interesting read. And That was the thing about it that I was surprised by, was why not just take this thing that's out there and we'll just kind of redirect it slightly, and now we have all that same access to everything.
Right. He showed it with a powerful but a state-sponsored advanced nation-state loader, he called it. And that was specifically, it was about MacWare. So it is interesting. It is significant.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And this is part of
the one he used was called Apple Juice, JEUS.C.
Yeah, we've talked about that
memory
here.
Infection. Yeah, exactly. It's
Charlotte. John. What's the nature of these attacks? Is it something that you have to have access to the machine physically? And then
so
serve
I don't think.
Or is it over the internet?
I'm not going to. I'm going to be careful what I say, because this guy was an expert and I'm most certainly not. But it looks to me like it was all just kind of accessed via wireless and without having to write any client-side code, is how he described it. So I don't think you have to, you know, break into somewhere physically, if that's what you're asking. It is.
Yeah.
It seems to me that it's all by taking control of the relevant servers and so on.
Yeah, that's a tricky business. You have to be careful about links.
A lot of things. Like I said, we've talked about it here. And part of what I remember of it is that it was something that was, the Apple Juice one specifically, was something that was being spread, I guess is the right way just to say that. As part of a cryptocurrency app. So if you're like a Bitcoin kind of person who's doing some of that kind of stuff, there can be some sketchy apps out there. And one of them was the one that was installing this malware. And there's a lot of stuff. And it was, you know, silent. You can't always tell it's there. And it's something that you're installing. You know that you're installing this cryptocurrency related app. So you're giving it all the permission to do the things it needs to do. And one of the things it's doing is messing with your machine in some particular way. And I don't think this one was ransomware. I think it just gave remote places access to your computer to do whatever they wanted. So I don't remember either. But yeah, it was not great. And that was one of the malware things, like Charlotte, you've been on and talked about other, like the rise in malware on the Mac side.
Sure, not necessarily viruses
that do something
malicious,
but something like this where your computer becomes part of a botnet or something.
It can be all that. So yeah, we've talked a fair bit about that. And it's also, I mean, I've mentioned the apple juice one, but this researcher, Patrick Wardle, did actually manage to use a similar technique to repurpose three other pieces of Mac malware as well. The thing that jumps out to me as not someone who is, you know, I'm not a security researcher, I'm not an expert, I just find the field fascinating, is this idea that, you know, fairly accomplished hackers and attackers could get hold of malware beyond the, you know, more powerful than something they could perhaps create themselves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That to me seems quite significant, if that's the kind of thing he's implying is possible.
It's right. I wonder if there's a team at Apple that buys up this malware as well and experiments with it, sort of in a laboratory environment. Well, that'd be kind of cool. If I were Apple, I'd hire a team to do that.
Yeah, well, they've always been a bit funny with kind of bug bounties and stuff, haven't they? They've got better at that. So I don't know if they do internal stuff as well.
Yeah, they've hired some notable folks, like notable jailbreakers and people like that, who do some of the what I would call benevolent hacking, like the people that kind of poke holes and like try to poke a hole just to see if there's a hole there, not because they have any sort of malicious intent. It's just sort of fun for them. So they've hired some of those folks, and we've heard before about relationships that Apple's made with others in this kind of space that makes it sort of interesting. So
yeah, and this malware has a aging process. It was designed for a certain state of macOS when it was leaked, and since then Apple's made patches. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important to keep your Mac up to date, because if these malwares that have been leaked out have an aging process built in, then they're not going to work in a few years. And so
yeah,
and keep your Mac patched.
Right. And that's where Security Friday comes from. That's why we talk about it here, to make sure people are aware of this kind of stuff, so that you know this kind of attack is out there. And, you know, like we've seen similar sorts of things on iOS. We want to make sure that people are aware. So, John, actually, I want to move along to you and talk about processors. You come on occasionally and talk to me about different kinds of processors and what Apple's up to with the newest wave of machines. And you have some interesting thoughts on that now.
Well, it mostly has to do with renewed rumors from Ming-Chi Kuo about Apple planning on shipping a Mac with an ARM processor in the first half of 2021. We've been hearing about these rumors for a long time. Mm-hmm. And every time there is a little blurb from Ming-Chi Kuo or somebody else that Apple's moving to ARM processors, there's a flurry of articles, and they all rehash the same thing, basically saying that Apple's going to go all ARM all the time and quickly. And I found an article from Jason Snell for Particle Debris we published last week that had some better insights into the process and the challenges that are confronting Apple. Basically, there are a lot of people who boot their Macs into Windows, or they do a virtual machine with Windows in an academic or university environment where they have to be able to run multiple operating systems, maybe Linux too. And so you hardly ever hear about these articles in reference to ARM processors with virtual machine hardware built in, like the Intel processors. Now, somebody told me a long time ago that it wouldn't be very hard for Apple to modify the ARM architecture to include virtual machine hardware so that you could run multiple virtual machines in ARM. But it gets really sticky when you have virtual machines running on a non-x86 instruction set, because then you've got emulation plus virtual machines, and that gets kind of complicated, and people tend to not talk about it because I think it's kind of a black art. And the second thing that Jason talked about was that there are probably some Macs that will never go ARM, like the Mac Pro and the iMac Pro. And maybe even the entire MacBook Pro line that is used by professionals who just insist on perfect Intel compatibility. And so Jason raised the idea that, you know, Apple might just start with one Mac, a consumer Mac. Mm-hmm. That would have, and maybe the MacBook Air is a good candidate, where you'd have tremendous battery life. You would have emulation. You wouldn't be able to run a virtual machine. Maybe, maybe not.
Okay.
And you'd just be able to run Mac OS and emulation, and apps would be sort of in a transition era where they would
like
be
we did from OS 9 to OS 10, or
yeah, you would eventually have fat binaries again,
or to Intel in the first place when we made those, each of those switches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it makes sense for Apple to experiment with one ARM machine, maybe two, but very few at first, and to see how it goes and kind of try it out in the marketplace, see what the adoption rate is, mm-hmm. not disrupt the entire Macintosh line, especially the Pro machines, and see how it goes. And if it's a failure, then just kill it like the 12-inch MacBook. If it's a success, or it looks like there's a path forward technically, then Apple might expand the ARM processors to more consumer machines. But Jason points out that Apple may never go to ARM on the Pro line.
Right.
Just because there are so many people who can't take the speed penalty.
Yeah.
Of course, Apple's emulation in the past was pretty darn good, and there wasn't much of a penalty with Rosetta.
Right. But if the reason you have a Pro machine is because you need all that horsepower for audio editing or video editing or some other sort of...
Industrial
strength.
With your app.
Yeah, industrial strength app. Compatibility. I think, on the one hand, that makes a lot of sense. On the other hand, being part ARM and part not doesn't seem like a very Apple move. So I can see both sides of it. Like, I can see why they would, and I can see why they wouldn't.
Another thing they might do is come out with a new Mac altogether.
That's true.
Something that would be like a MacBook Air, but would be a...
You mean like they're doing now with the rumors we're hearing about an iPad with a trackpad?
Well, it's already got an ARM in it.
And the toaster fridge?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little toaster fridgey, I think.
Brian and I talked about toaster fridge on background mode a while back. There could be a integrated machine that's like the best of both, a touchscreen and an ARM processor, and it has Mac capabilities and a mouse capability and a trackpad. Mm-hmm. There could be some toaster fridge in our future that is an ARM processor that would run Mac software.
John, you've given us the lay of the land, but what do you think when it comes down to like what, and these may be different answers, what do you hope and what do you expect is going to happen with Apple and ARM?
What I expect is Apple will continue to be annoyed with Intel, with its roadmaps and with its reliability as a partner.
That's a very reasonable expectation, I think.
Responsiveness to Apple's requested needs and so on. My hope is that macOS and iOS and iPadOS will remain distinct. Unless Apple figures out a way to build a beautiful toaster fridge that runs both kinds of software and merges the hardware, but allows you to run the software of your choice. So that would be kind of cool. Kind of a one machine that can act in both modes. The thing is that, and you would ask me the other day about a larger display. Mm-hmm. One of the things that Brian and I talked about on Background Now 2 weeks ago was that with Macintoshes, you can have arbitrarily large displays. 2 weeks previous to that, I had John Keat on, and he talked about his Mac Pro with 6 30-inch displays racked.
Yes.
Okay. And there are people who have multiple displays that are very big, maybe not six.
Yeah.
But the largest iPad you can buy is 12.9 inches.
Right.
So the question is, what's the path forward for the Mac on an iPad like framework if we don't have access to much larger displays.
Mm-hmm.
So that's an issue too.
Well, I'm curious kind of where, like, what I hope is that the ARM stuff continues to evolve, just because this kind of attention being paid to the Macs is the kind of thing that might make people believe what Tim Cook has been saying all this time, which is we care about the Mac. The Mac is important to us. We really want to.
Until it's not.
Right. And, but it's a thing that he's continued to say. And so this is complete conjecture on my part, but I wonder if maybe the actual nuts and bolts of that transition are maybe taking longer than anticipated, which is why he's been saying it for so long. And we haven't seen anything come out of that. So we've had one new machine, which is the 16 inch MacBook Pro. You know, something in a new size with new display, new keyboard. Why that's not rolling out everywhere, I still can't figure out. That's a story for another day, I assure you.
Why did the 16-inch MacBook Pro come out with Coffee Lake Refresh, but there was no companion 13-inch? Now mm-hmm. we're hearing about a 13-inch companion coming out months and months later with Ice Lake.
I
don't understand why that happened. I think my guess is the Coffee Lake Refresh for the 16-inch fit, based on the thermodynamics and the power and the architecture. But Apple decided that Coffee Lake Refresh wasn't right for the new generation 13-inch.
Yeah.
And had Ice Lake on their roadmap and were salivating over the prospect of a much faster 13-inch. Decided to wait,
mm-hmm.
hoping and praying that Intel would stay on schedule. Stay on. Stay on track, Luke. Stay on track.
Stay on target. Stay on target. We got a new Mini in 18. We got the iMac Pro is currently the oldest machine, which is November, December of 2017.
Yes.
And then late 18, because October 18, I think, was the Mini.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We got iMacs in 19, like April. It was spring. Like, we got regular old iMacs updated in the springtime of last year. So almost a year ago. And then the MacBook Air was last summer. And the 16-inch Pro came out last November. And then in December, we got the Mac Pro. So they have, like, we've gotten updates on some things. So I feel like really it's the iMac Pro that needs some attention paid, and hopefully they're doing that. And the biggest indicator that they are going to be doing that is that our own Brian Chaffin just got a new iMac. So,
well, the iMac Pro probably
got a new one on the way then.
Stay Intel along with its partner, the Mac Pro. What's interesting case to me is the Mac Mini. Mac mm-hmm. Mini is a headless Mac that a lot of people depend on because they can't afford a Mac Pro.
Yeah.
And to take that into ARM and all attendant difficulties and software glitches and so on that kind of architecture is a problem. So,
yeah, Apple, I would like to
stay with ARM on the portables to take advantage of the battery life.
Sure. Yeah. I don't think we're going to get a desktop. I think the first desktop ARM will be Mini, and I think I don't think it'll be soon though. And 2021 even sounds soon to me, like relatively. So
yeah.
Charlotte, how about you?
I think they'll up. You know, I've got the mid 2018 Mac Mini.
Yes,
which is a great piece of kit. I suspect in 6 months or so, whenever, you know, whatever the mm-hmm. Apple timeline is, that will probably need a refresh.
That would probably be WWDC in June.
With more ports, please. Thank you. Goodbye.
All right. I think that's basically going to do it for us. If you, at least for today, if you have thoughts on when you think new machines are coming out, if you have strong opinions about ARM processors, you can send those to us at observations@macobserver.com. You can catch us at TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. John, thanks for being here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Charlotte, thank you as always for coming by.
Love it. Thanks so much. Bye, John.
Bye, Charlotte.
I'm your host, Kelly Gamon. I will talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other.